did it grow? It seems to have operated sort of legally, openly, up to a certain point, and then sort of semi-legally or clandestinely a bit later. How did the party actually function?
So we can tell you now the mistakes that the party did make. We tell you this because we hope you don't repeat the same things in your time. You see, the party was a small, we have no idea how small it was. And it met, developed a few people, and then got all these ideas flowed from the party, the analysis of the situation and what the problem was in South Africa, and then came to the conclusion that the problem here was the land problem and also the national problem. And these two problems meet at the base. Now, how to mobilize the population in order to get rid of this was another matter. So all these things that we formed were going to be instruments for guiding the population towards the ultimate revolution that would solve the land question and will solve the national question. You catch what I'm getting at. Now, from the point of view of theory, I don't think we made too many mistakes. But we made one mistake that we kept it like that for too long, and it was based on intellectuals. Now, intellectuals can't make a revolution because they belong to a class that won't make the revolution. But you see, we were also constrained by the atmosphere. If they knew you were this, they would chuck you there at once. That we were constrained by that. But a proper party should, in spite of that, go out and manage to get the working class, spread out and get the working class. Now, our problem was that spreading out, I mean, as a party, it remained a small little party. And that is why it could be knocked to pieces at a point so easily, because it was small. And it consisted of the petit bourgeois. We did not go out sufficiently to the working class, because had we done that, there would have been a few of the working class who would have, grasped the ideas. And in spite of everything else, they would spread it amongst the workers. And that is why when the bad times came, the thing went to pieces. All the things were built, the anti-cat went that way, the convention that way, because we did not have a party that was rooted in the masses. But the direction was correct. The politics of it were correct. As it is now, I think myself, and I used to say when we were here, even if the unity movement were to die tomorrow completely, the people of South Africa would have to create a unity movement in order to carry a revolution. You see what I mean? When I say they would have to create, you see, the very structuring of the unity movement. And if you knew how also it decided that it shouldn't remain up there, it should come down to the masses, and at the base it would be known as the Coordinating Unity Committees. Now, we didn't want individuals, we wanted organizations. Say Cape Town, for instance. In Cape Town you had the teachers. About the mistakes. The mistakes we made. And but I think the politics of it, you'd go far to find too many faults. I think the politics were right, dead right. Now, you see, I was saying then, this unity movement, right down at grass level, it would take Cape Town, for instance. You had the Teachers League there. You had all sorts of organizations in Cape Town. You had the Anti-CAD, you had the CIBIC, so on and so, and even the African Teachers Association was there too, and workers were there.
Yes, sir.
Now,
yes, sir.
On this level, these would meet not as individuals, but as organizations. In fact, we tried it, and we gave the bourgeoisie a shock. You know the tactic they had? They would, from time to time, bring up the question, the natives are coming here to take the bread out of the mouths of the colored people. You know that tactic. So, trying to sow. Animosity between the races. So what we did when we had formed this, then they would call meetings, the whites would call meetings to tell the colored people they must not permit the natives to come and so take the bread out of the mouths of them. So what we did was, it wasn't the blacks who went to go to the meetings, to break the meetings. It was the Coordinating Unity Committee. And in Cape Town, the majorities were black, were colored. So they got the biggest shock when, at the meeting, colored people came. Together with the Africans, and broke up the meeting. And broke up those meetings. Now, the point I'm really coming to is this.
I had something.
When I said, even if the convention, the movement would die out, they would have to form it by any other name in order to succeed. Because these were, in fact, like the Soviets. You see what I mean? These groups here, organizations, the local ones, were like the Soviets in Cape Town. They would be the Soviets of Cape Town. But we never mentioned the word Soviet. We simply brought about the idea. even the unity movement itself, we don't want individuals to join, it's organizations that must join. Because then it is the organizations that are going to carry on the struggle. It must be based on organizations. And this is the point we are very strong on. But then there should be, you know, the up and down, so and so. The decisions are taken at the big conference, they must go down to the... But then from the base, that is the coordinating unity committees at the base, there should also be a comeback to the top. And this is the way a struggle will have to be carried. And that is why I say, even if they killed it today, they would have to form a similar thing tomorrow by any other name. That was the whole point that had to be learned. It is essential that at a conference up there, decisions are taken, and these are sent down. Now when they go down, we're not prophets. We can't anticipate everything. When they get down there, other problems arise as a result of what we have decided upon, as a result of what we are doing. Now, these should now be sent upwards again, to the top. So the top knows now, this is a problem. And the top has also to act.
Take a concrete example. I think it was mentioned about the question of the land. Now, a post-apartheid, I don't want to use the word, the phrase, a post-apartheid era. But supposing the revolution does take place.
Liberated.
Yeah, liberation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the party comes to power. Now it's a question, the crucial question of the division of the land. Now, the 10-point program says that there should be a new division of the land. And we propose that a conference be called of all the peasant organizations. And we know there are many. Or peasant representatives. And we will send the party members round beforehand to go and organize the peasants in home organization in order to express your views at the conference that will be held in regard to the question of the fair division of the land. And peasants, delegates will come and put their point of view. Now we know that we can't do as Jaffe once did, take the whole land area and there are so many peasants, therefore divide the area of the land into so many individual holdings.
That's nonsensical.
Which is absolutely nonsensical. We go back to Napoleon number one era, or number second.
Because some areas are rich and some are stony. Yeah. Mm. What can you do? Right.
Right. And the party will have to be clear on what it wants. And we know that any socialist system will want to have large state farms or cooperative farms, see that they are managed properly, state owned by the people, for the benefit of the people, just like the factories.
In the
now, go on.
No, I wanted to ask this question about the working class.
Yeah,
and
okay.
What was your view at that time in the '40s on on the growing black urban working class?
Right.
Where there were sort of quite a few urban-based militant working class struggles. How did that affect your view of things?
No, it did not affect our view. I think at that time, in Joburg particularly, amongst the Africans, there were two really big trade unions. Mm-hmm. Now, they were not recognized as trade unions. The law didn't recognize them. Mm-hmm. But these fellows went on strike from time to time and forced the employers to recognize, to negotiate with them. So much so that they not only recognized them, the employers, outside the government, but they also recognized what they called, what do they call that, where you can't employ somebody outside the
closed shop.
Yeah. The employers had to accept the closed shop. Yeah. Now, insofar as we were concerned, now at that time, you had these fellows, and but there was not a single peasant organization to talk about. And it was clear to us that no matter what they do in the towns, the vast majority at that time when the industry was very low, the vast majority of the blacks was in the country. So they could go nowhere. And that's what made us turn to the country, to organize the country. Mm-hmm. Now then.
Things have changed now.
Hmm? Yeah, well, things have changed now, but the principles still remain the same. Even now. But of course, there's a new stupid idea now coming from Europe that there are no peasants in South Africa. I can't think of anything more stupid. Where do these people stay? Let me put it this way.
You want some
tea? I'll just give you a little.
It's a tea. Oh,
okay, I'll take a tea. 1987, June, by Professor Spice. The whites were 4.8 million. The Africans 23 million, the colored people 3.5 million, the Indian 0.8 million. Total 32 million, 0.1. Right. Economically active population is 13 million. Remember that the total population is 32 million. Economically active population is 13 million. The present people employed in the formal sector of the economy are now 7 to 8 million. Therefore, there are 5 to 6 million people who are not absorbed by the economy of the country.
How many?
5 to 6 million people who are not absorbed by the economy of the country. Now, shall I repeat the numbers? The economically active population is 13 million. The present people employed in the formal sector of the economy are now 7 to 8 million. Therefore, there are 5 to 6 million people who are not absorbed by the economy of the country. Now, where are these people? If there are no peasants, where are these 5 to 6 million people? They can't just disappear. They are not in the towns. They are not in the farms, because they count the number of people employed in the farms and the number of people in the towns. Where are they? Somebody says, there are no peasants. If they think there are no peasants, then where are these people?
Yes, but economically employed, my main peasants too, you know.
Yes, and we does mean peasants. Mm. But the point is that the figures employed, you understand, actually employed, leave out 5 to 6 million, not in the economy of the country. Where are they?
Well, yeah, it's quite a whole question, theoretical and otherwise, because there are unemployed people in the cities, and then there are also the unemployed people that have been forced back into the countryside. Mm.
Yes, that's correct. There are unemployed people in the country, but the number of the people in the towns is known. That's what I mean. That's why you say there is 13 million of
people. Who is your fool?
I don't know what happened to it. So now the question, the number of people in town, whether employed or unemployed, is known and is counted. Now, where are these people? That's the first question. The second question is, they can't live in the air. They must live somewhere. That means they are out where in the bush, which is not accounted for. But in the bush, that is in the countryside, in the Bantustans.
Can you get some tea?
I don't take sugar. But I do take milk.
The people in the Bantustans form part and parcel of the population. But nobody says there are so many. Why? Because they are hiding this business of the unemployed, the five to six million. Anyway, This came as an aside.
Yeah.
What we were talking about was our attitude towards liberation. The first thing we had to find out was what is the problem. And we came to the conclusion that it was landlessness and lack of so-and-so. Of rights. And the question was, how do we get to the people to show them this? And there was a long, long debate.
Milk?
With milk, yes, and sugar. Long, long debate on that score with the CP. The Communist Party view, we spoke about this last time, didn't we?
No, not in any detail, no.
Communist Party position was, it is not the duty of a revolutionary to form a national organization. What we can do is to give support to the national bourgeoisie.
Oh yes.
And we spoke about this, yeah.
But not in relation to the Communist Party, in relation to
the Now, this we rejected offhand, because the national bourgeoisie, was the Afrikaners. They were anti-imperialism, it's true, but they were also anti-us. So then we had to go back and think, fall back on ourselves. And this is the reason we had, we formed what we did form. There was a point I was coming to.
The problem, defining the problem.
So, therefore, we decided we have to form a national movement. But that national movement cannot free us.
I don't like the smell of fish.
Should I take it?
We knew from the start, even if they gave us a vote, all of us, a vote, we don't eat a vote. We eat food, and we haven't got the land. The land is theirs. What happens? So, the truth of the matter is that you can't solve that problem within the framework of the bourgeoisie. You see, it's not soluble that way. Bourgeois democratic rights will not give us land. So, but in order to get rid of the bourgeois democratic right, now we'll have to organize ourselves. And we organize ourselves according to the way we are all oppressed together. And we work together that way. But within the movement, there are classes. The national movement has classes too. But those classes, what is it we have in common is oppression. So at this stage, we have something in common. So we can unite because we are all oppressed together with them. But we knew that at a certain point, those of the top amongst the blacks, that in fact the problem is not color. Color is being used simply. It's not a problem. And they would go over against us. But you see, in order to organize the masses, you can't organize them on the basis of let us nationalize this, let us nationalize that. It's meaningless to them. So we had to get all the classes amongst the blacks together they must learn together. The working class, in the final analysis, is the next stage of development, whether we like it or not, not only in Africa, throughout the world. So, since it is it that will give us these, we must have it there, but we must have the peasants with them, and the intellectuals at this point together. Then they learn, first of all, the peasants learn to know that the workers are their friends. They depend on them, and the workers get to know that they can't get there without the peasants. So they work together. So there will come a stage where a stage which we are reaching now, where there will be a crisis in all this. Now when the crisis comes, they're going to try to divide us.
What crisis, you see?
The crisis, there's a crisis there today in South Africa. That's because, precisely because the
crisis amongst the ruling classes.
The crisis is, the whole country is involved in the crisis. Precisely because the blacks no longer accept.
A national crisis.
Yeah, that's right. So, what were we going to say, John?
They will try to divide.
Yeah, that's right. They will try to divide, as they are doing right now. At that point, now all along the line, and in fact